All right, very good. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This morning, the first matter on our calendar is in the matter of MSRS General Employees Retirement Plan, Retirement Benefit of Leah Hedman. And counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral argument this morning. Please introduce yourself and your client prior to beginning your oral argument. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And at this time, the appellant may commence the oral argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Michael Vancelo, and I represent the relator, Leah Persich Hedman. This appeal concerns the construction of MSRS Rule of 90 Statute, Section 352.115, Subdivision 3. And the specific issue on this appeal is whether the MSRS board erred in failing to liberally construe the undefined language and ambiguity in this section in Ms. Hedman's favor when it ruled that she was not a covered employee under PARA prior to July 1, 1989, and therefore was not eligible for the Rule of 90. And because
that she is claiming the Rule of 90 under the MSRS plan, isn't she?
Yeah, that's what this appeal is all about, Your Honor.
All right. She's not claiming the Rule of 90 under PARA.
She already has that, Your Honor. She was the ALJ in the prior PARA proceedings litigated that issue and determined that she is entitled to the Rule of 90 under PARA.
All right. And I know you're arguing that there has to be a liberal construction of the statute, but are we permitted as a reviewing court reviewing the statutes de novo to basically ignore the language or give a different meaning to the language than what's set forth in the statutes?
No, Your Honor, and I'm going to explain to you exactly why the language cuts in Ms. Hedman's favor and not the construction of that MSRS puts on the language. In fact, let's get to that right away, because that's the operative issue here is the language at issue is 352.115 subdivision 3 states that the MSRS rule of 90 applies to a person who became a covered employee or a member of a public pension fund, which includes PARA, before July 1, 1989. And because Ms. Hedman satisfies this definition, as I'll explain further, she is entitled to the Rule of 90. First off, the board itself admitted that the term covered employee of a public pension fund is not defined in Section 352.115. It's not defined in Chapter 352, and it's not defined anywhere. Ms. Hedman is, in fact, a person who became a covered employee of a Minnesota pension fund, namely PARA, before July 1, 1989. Now, what has happened
Mr. Vancelo, I agree with you, but I mean, the words covered employee are not defined, but, you know, would it be fair to say that under the statute, there is language that discusses what covered or covered by the system means? Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. In fact, that was my very next point here, and I'm going to address that, because that is what MSRS is trying to graph the definition that you just mentioned in 352.01 subdivision 23 to try to make section 352.115 fit its construction. But that does not remedy the statutory ambiguity. First, that subdivision that I just 352.01 subdivision 23 does not define the term at issue here, namely covered employee of a public pension fund. It defines coverage or covered by the system and refers to a state employee who makes contributions to the state pension fund. The reference to covered employee in section 352.115, however, on the other hand, relates to a person who became a covered employee under any referenced public pension fund, not just MSRS. And furthermore, MSRS's construction based on that definition, Judge Connolly, that you mentioned, simply makes no sense in that they would have that section read 352.115, that you must be a member of MSRS or a member of the listed pension funds, which includes MSRS. In other words, they argue that the section should be read to mean you must be a member of MSRS or a member of MSRS. Not only is that nonsensical, but it also violates the statutory canon of construction that you are not to render terms redundant or a nullity. Had the legislature intended the construction that MSRS is now arguing, it would simply have referenced a person who is a member of MSRS or another pension fund. Or more succinctly, it simply would have said a person who is a member of a pension fund. But instead, it would have made no reference to a covered employee. And notably, the MSRS did not even respond to this argument in its brief. What they did do instead, and we pointed this out, is that they inserted numbers and a comma in section, its description of section 352.115 that are not there in their attempt to alter the meaning of that section. Had the legislature intended to read the statute the way MSRS indicated with its alterations, it would have done so. But it did not.
Well, could I just ask you, because I'm just looking, I mean, if you're saying, I guess I need to understand what you're arguing here, because I'm looking at the 352.01 definition where it says covered and employed, or it says coverage or covered by the system means, and you're saying that that doesn't apply here? Why? What was the purpose of doing that section?
Well, that applies to where in Chapter 352 those terms are used, not to where in 352.115 where a different term is used, namely covered employee of a public pension fund. Elsewhere in Chapter 352, the specific terms defined in that section you're looking at, Your Honor, coverage or covered by the system, the legislature was saying, well, that what that means is that you are an MSRS state employee who makes contributions to the MSRS fund. But 352.115 is not similarly limited. It applies to a covered employee of any public pension fund. And our argument is that minimally that is ambiguous and undefined, and the court should construe that liberally in Ms. Hedman's favor.
Well,
Go ahead,
Judge Connolly.
Yes, Judge Hootman. Following up on that point, Mr. Venslow, so, would it be fair to say that, you know, the para pension fund and the MSRS pension fund are two different funds, correct?
Right.
And they cover you correct me if I'm wrong, but they cover sort of two different groups of people. MSRS is the state employees and para is sort of everybody else who works for the government. Would that be a fair statement?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay.
So, I understand your point, and I think there's some validity to it, but my concern is that, you know, since there's two competing factors, everybody should get their pension, and then these pension funds should be solvent. So I guess, when you're saying, well, you know, it's redundant, I guess I am concerned that, well, no, it just means if you're trying to get your annuity from MSRS, you needed to have contributed to MSRS prior to the certain date to get the rule of 90. Now, why is that sort of logic flawed?
Yes, Your Honor. The reason it's flawed is that 352.115, you don't have to be an enrolled member in order to get qualified for the MSRS rule of 90. The statute refers to a covered employee or a member of a pension fund. In other words, it uses the term covered employee or member of a pension fund in the disjunctive. Ms. Hedman qualifies if either of those apply to her. And it's also clear that by using those terms in the disjunctive, the legislature clearly envisioned that someone could be a covered employee of a pension fund and not a member of a pension fund, precisely Ms. Hedman's situation here. Again, had the legislature intended that eligibility for Rule of 90 was only available to those who were enrolled in and contributing members to a public pension fund before July 1, 1989, it could have and would have stated as much, but it plainly did not. And MSRS cannot read covered employee and member as meaning the same thing without violating another canon of statutory construction, and that is the rule against surplusage, which requires giving each word in a statute, word or phrase, a distinct meaning. Your Honor also, I think, was maybe alluding to the fact that an argument that MSRS makes that while there are different analyses for Rule of 90 under PIRA and MSRS. Well, first off, as we argued, that doesn't make any sense. You can apply the doctrine of in pari materia, a well-established doctrine of statutory construction, and construe related statutes that have the same purpose, common purpose, similarly, the same. In other words, to try to achieve a uniform result. And the MSRS has never pointed out why would it be that there would be they do say there's a more lenient test for Rule of 90 under PARA than under MSRS. But again, that doesn't make any sense. Why would that be? Why? What reason would the legislature have to favor PARA members over MSRS members? And in fact, even had they done that, when it comes to Rule of 90, that arguably would be an equal protection violation. So it just doesn't make any sense. They've never articulated why it is. They say the tests are different. Okay, maybe, maybe not, depending upon how you construe the language. But why would they, should they be different? There is no reason they should be different.
Let me ask you, we do have, so the Rule of 90 for each of the two funds does have one really different phrase, you know, term. So the PARA Rule of 90 refers to public employee, and the MSRS Rule of 90 refers to covered employee. So the legislature did decide to distinguish between the two funds by using those two terms, at least presumptively. That's, you know, we assume the legislature made conscious choices about its selection of words. So I appreciate that covered employees never expressly defined, but we do have in the very same chapter 352, we have that set of definitions from which we can, you know, draw a definition of covered employee. So I guess I'm not really tracking your argument about, you know, we should assume that the legislature meant the same thing for the PARA Rule of 90 and the MSRS Rule of 90 when the legislature chose two different terms.
Let me address that, Your Honor. Several things. First off, as I pointed out, that this definitional section 352.01, subdivision 23, does not define covered employee of a public pension fund. So that's one thing. Secondly, is that yes, the PARA definition is different than the MSR definition, but it doesn't mean that they can't construe the MSR definition consistently with how PARA determines when someone is eligible for Rule of 90.
Mr. Vansell, I mean, I'm just following your argument, but I'm looking at the judge's order, finding number 17. The judge actually found that your client didn't become a public employee until after she completed the 6 months of working, which occurred in early August of 1990. So the judge made a factual finding that kind of defeats your argument, doesn't it?
Your Honor, because MSRS was not part of that ALJ proceeding, and the court made it very clear it was not, it was not determining any of MSRS's obligations to Ms. Hedman in that ALJ proceeding. So that does not, in our view, in any sense, defeat her argument. Her argument is that the Ramsey County frankly screwed up. They should have enrolled her in PARA when she began her employment, and PARA should have discovered that and corrected that. And she should not be punished because of that mistake, which was not her fault. I see my time is up here, Your Honors.
Okay, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. The respondent may proceed at this time.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Steve Forrest. I'm an assistant attorney general here on behalf of the Minnesota State Retirement System Board. And the exclusive issue presented in this appeal is whether the MSRS board erred in finding appellant was not Rule of 90 eligible for her MSRS plan. Minnesota Minnesota Statute Section 352.115 Subdivision 3 provides that one is a Rule of 90 eligible if they became a covered employee or member of an enumerated pension fund before July 1st, 1989. And appellant makes no contention that she was a member of PARA before July 1st, 1989. So the MSRS board determined that appellant was not a covered employee because she was not a contributing member to MSRS before that date. And in making that determination, the MSRS board looked at the statutory definition that we you all were just discussing was of coverage, which is defined as one who contributes to MSRS. Because appellant did not contribute to MSRS before July 1st, 1989, and because she was not a member before that date, she's not eligible for Rule of 90 for MSRS. It is the MSRS board's position that this court's analysis should be that simple. Appellant's primary argument is that the term covered employee is ambiguous, and this court should therefore construe that ambiguity in her favor based on considerations of equity. A statutory term is only ambiguous, however, when it is subject to more than one reasonable interpretation. And appellant fails to offer a reasonable alternative interpretation of covered employee anywhere in her briefing.
Well, I want to direct you, though, to the, I think where the primary argument is if you look at 352.116 subdivision 1A and C, the rule of 90 is set forth as a person who first becomes a covered employee or a member of a pension fund. And I think the argument is that the covered employee doesn't apply here because when you look at that definition, it's referring to a state employee. But she was a member, or she should have been a member of a pension fund. So therefore, she does qualify. So how do you respond to that argument?
Well, Your Honor, she makes no contention, I guess, at the outset that she was a member of PARA before that date. She says now on appeal for the first time in changing her position that she took between or before the PARA board that she should have been a member. But that issue was conclusively decided before the PARA board, and it was not appealed. It's a final decision of the board, and we're not here on a writ of certiorari of the PARA board's decision. So the question and the argument, as I understand it from counsel, is that she was a covered employee of PARA. And as discussed in the brief, that term, when considering how the statute is structured, doesn't make any sense. And the reason being is that Chapter 352, the MSRS statute, refers throughout the chapter to its own plan members, or, you know, it doesn't use the term members, but refers to it as in terms of coverage. And other plans use the term, including PARA here, member. So specifically, Chapter 353, the PARA plan, defines member and does not define covered employee. But rather, MSRS defines coverage. It doesn't define covered employee, granted, but it does not define member. So when you look at the statute as a whole, the idea that appellant was a covered employee for PARA doesn't make any sense in the structure of the statute. And if there was any confusion about that, the ALJ actually specifically stated in his recommendation, she's not a PARA covered employee. At least twice in the ALJ's recommendation, the ALJ used that specific term, not a PARA covered employee. And appellant had an opportunity before the para board, you know, the board that would make the determination of whether or not she was a para covered employee, to the extent that that has any meaning. She had the opportunity to contest that. And on appeal for the first time, she appears to be saying that the ALJ's use of that term was just merely dicta. However, appellant didn't object to the term or that term as being dicta when she went before the para board. And in fact, she asked the para board to make changes that were adopted of the ALJ's decision. And one of those changes wasn't, you know, please take out this dicta that refers to me as a para, or as not being a para covered employee.
Well, why, what does it mean? I mean, what's the difference between a covered employee or a member of a pension fund? And it's used, member of a pension fund is used in both Rule of 90 statutes.
Well, I think to answer that, it's good to sort of back up from, you know, 10,000 feet here and realize that the legislature created these independent plans that are governed by independent statutes and by independent boards that have any number of innumerable differences and different provisions that apply to each plan. So in terms of MSRS, the statute refers to coverage. That's the term that's used throughout the statute. And other plans, as cited in the brief, including PARA, specifically use the language member. And the reason for that, I mean, the legislature's intent behind using these different terms, you know, I can't exactly speak to other than to say that clearly the legislature intended for these plans to be different and have different provisions that apply differently to its different members or covered members as applicable.
Is there any dispute as to whether there were actual contributions made by Ms. Hedman prior to July 1, 1989 date?
No, Your Honor, and that's a very good point because, again, appellant offers no reasonable alternative definition for what she thinks covered employee to mean in the context of PARA, and she is concedes that she never contributed to PARA before that date. She was never a member of PARA, and she had nothing other than the statutory Rule of 90 eligibility for PARA. And so, you know, Rule of 90 eligibility, it's important to note too, is not an entitlement to an annuity in and of itself. It's the entitlement to a calculation, a specific annuity calculation at some point in the future. So the idea that covered employee of PARA could mean that, or that you could be a covered employee of PARA simply by virtue of the fact that you may be entitled to some annuity calculation in the future, isn't consistent with any sort of reasonable definition of covered employee.
Is that true? I mean, the Rule of 90, as I understand it, is it doesn't mean you get more of your pension. It just means if you're covered by the Rule of 90 and retire before a certain age, you don't get penalized. And I understand that, you know, they, you know, the idea being they want you to keep working and not retire early so that you can't have the best of both worlds. I mean, I understand that, but, you know, I assume when this is all was created, you know, back a long time ago, it was because, you know, there was the shift to, you know, greater undertaking by the state to, you know, which obviously has more money than your typical county, you know, plan or county player plan. And so, but they were going to try to merge them at the same time that, okay, so that no one complains, you will sort of get this little benefit, or not benefit, but you won't get this penalty. And so, I mean, isn't it possible that back then you could be isn't one distinction that, well, maybe you weren't contributing at the time, but you were covered under it? I mean, is that a possibility, you know, in order to sort of grease the skids so, you know, this all was done?
Sure. Well, and at the outset, I should say that there's no question that appellant is Rule of 90 eligible for PARA and will receive the full benefit of that PARA. So at the time of her retirement, when she retires, assuming that her attained age plus years of allowable service equal 90, her benefit is not going to be reduced by virtue of early retirement. And that's absolutely clear. But the interpretation that her mere eligibility back then would make her a covered employee in a plan that doesn't even use that term, that's not a reasonable alternative definition for what covered employee should mean. So the idea that she was covered simply by virtue of the fact that she was rule of 90 eligible, that's what I'm contending is not a reasonable interpretation of the point. And just to illustrate by hypothetical, what if, for instance, after May 31st, 1990, which is the date that she ceased being a full-time student, she quit her job and never actually contributed to PARA, but she was still technically eligible prior to that time. By appellant's logic, she would still be rule of 90 eligible for MSRS merely by virtue of being a public employee and being eligible for this hypothetical annuity calculation in the future, if that makes sense. So again, just to say, you know, to the extent that the court is going to find that this ambiguous, you know, appellant has to set forth what some reasonable alternative definition as it is applicable to her. And in her reply brief, she simply states, and, you know, I'm quoting here, that she need not define all the contexts by which this term might apply, but it certainly ought to apply in her circumstances in which she was erroneously and negligently timely enrolled in PARA. And I would offer to the court that while she doesn't need to give the whole universe of reasonable alternative definitions of the term, certainly she needs at least one reasonable alternative definition as applicable to her to establish that this term is ambiguous.
So, counsel, you make a good point about appellant's argument. I'm still trying to track one of your arguments. And so if you'd help me out, it's actually Judge Hooten mentioned this question earlier. So looking at the MSRS definition of rule of 90, how do we differentiate meaningfully between the terms covered employee or member of a pension fund?
The argument
appellant's making is that your interpretation, the one you're proposing that we adopt, creates a redundancy. So right. Could you address that?
Oh, certainly. Appellant is arguing that the term covered employee also refers to that sort of latter part of the sentence that says of the funds listed in Chapter 356. So a covered employee of MSRS. So appellant's contention is that if you say that it's a covered employee or member of a pension fund as listed, that that's redundant because one of the plans listed in 356 is MSRS. So it's a covered employee of MSRS or member of MSRS. And MSRS's response to that is that doesn't really make sense, that interpretation in the context of the statute, as I discussed earlier, where Chapter 352 specifically refers to its employees members that contributed, its members, for lack of a better way to put it, as covered member or as covered employees, not as members, excuse me. Whereas PARA uses the term member. So to look at that sentence, a covered employee or member isn't redundant because covered employee refers to one that contributes to MSRS and member refers to these other plans that actually specifically define members, such as the PARA statute, Chapter 353.
So you're telling me that the MSRS statute simply does not use the phrase member. It uses only covered employee. Right.
That's exactly right. If you look to the definitions, it doesn't define that term, but the Chapter 353 does, referring to PARA. As well as the other statutes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you keep quickly alluding to others. Are there other funds that maybe I'm just not aware of that also rely on members?
Yes. If you look at that list, if you were to go to the list within the statute, there are some other types of funds that are governed by other chapters within Minnesota statute and have other provisions applicable to them. Yes.
Yeah. When you say that statute, you're saying 356.3. Is that right?
That's correct. 30. That's correct.
Thank you.
Can I just ask you, let's assume hypothetically that Ramsey County had recognized her as an employee, as a public employee, and she had to contribute to PARA as a public employee. If that had been done prior to July 1, 1989, would she then be entitled to the rule of 90?
Certainly, yes.
Under MSRS?
Yes, because then she would have been a member of PERA before that time. So yeah, certainly then she would be Rule of 90 eligible for MSRS under those circumstances. Yes.
All right. And so this really turns then on whether, notwithstanding what she claims was the error of Ramsey County in not including her, that she should be given the benefit of the doubt here and be given she should have been a member, and they negligently failed to make her a member.
Correct. And that's a complete change of position than the position that she took before the PERA board. So it's MSRS's position that, you know, this was her status with PERA was conclusively decided by PERA in a decision that was not appealed. And so her change of position before the MSRS board, which had no authority to overturn that position, and of course, before this court, shouldn't be given any weight.
All right. So it's by virtue of the fact that she didn't appeal. Could you refer to the specific decision in the record that you're referring to, the PERA decision that you think is binding here that was not appealed?
Yeah, Your Honor, I believe that the PERA board's decision is in the record. I apologize. I don't have the specific site here for the PERA board's decision in the record. But that record, I will say, was made conclusive by virtue of its Minnesota statute chapter or section 356.96 subdivision 13. I don't want to go too far beyond my time here. I'm looking through the record now. I apologize.
Well, as the presiding judge, I will allow you to a few more minutes.
Sure, just give me one second here.
And the statute you just cited was 356 what?
Again? 356.96 subdivision 13, which affixes the time period for appeal and says that failure by a person to appeal to the Court of Appeals precludes the person from later raising in any subsequent administrative hearing or court proceeding those substantive or procedural issues that reasonably should have been raised in a timely appeal. And I did find it, Your Honor. It is in the record at 56, I believe, is where it begins.
Is this the, I have here in the addendum of the realtor an opinion here from the Office of Administrative Hearings, Judge Oxley.
That's correct. So it was referred by PERA staff to a fact-finding conference. A hearing was held. Judge Oxley made recommendations that the PERA board adopted in part with some minor modifications at the request of appellant that are reflected in that beginning in the record on 56.
And is there a specific finding in that within that order that you believe that binds them here and is dispositive of the issues that are currently before us?
Yes, Your Honor. They adopted Judge Oxley's findings in its entirety with those minor modifications, including the finding that she was not a member of PERA prior to, and she was a full-time student until May 31st, 1990, therefore ineligible, in any interpretation of the word is MSRS's position.
All right. Thank you. All right. Mr. Vanzel.
Yes. Several things, Your Honor. First off, there is no definition of covered employee of a public pension fund that's in use in 352.115. Council just admitted that. The board admitted that. You will find no such definition. Secondly, the ALJ, the references to the ALJ's findings, the ALJ made it abundantly clear, could not have been more clear, that he was not deciding any issues relating to the MSRS's obligations to Ms. Hedman, including its obligations under the Rule 90. So he did not decide whether she was a covered employee under a public pension fund for purposes of 352.115. That issue was never before him. He could not have decided it. Ms. Hedman could not have appealed it because he never, in fact, did decide that issue. Also, Judge Hooten, you really went right to the heart of this in your questions near the end. And that is that we wouldn't be here today but for the fact that Ramsey County did not enroll Ms. Hedman in PARA when she began her employment in June of 1989, before the July 1 date. And then PARA also screwed up by not rectifying that failure by Ramsey County.
Well, can I just ask you, as a practical matter, I mean, here's the problem I'm having with your argument, because I guess I always follow the money. If she didn't contribute anything, why should she get the benefit of those years she worked for Ramsey County under the rule of 90? I mean,
you know, good question, Your Honor, but here's the answer, and it's very simple, is that she could have gone back and contributed. There's a 3-year window of time where she could have gone back and made contributions from the day she started at Ramsey County, and the county could have made their contributions as well, but she never permitted to do that. They told her, well, there's no mechanism or way for you to go back and make contributions. Yes, there is. And in fact, there has to be, because there cannot be a denial of a substantive right because of an absence of a procedure. So yes, she could have and should have been allowed to go back and make the contribution so that she was a fully contributing member, just like anyone else who started that day along with her, who was properly enrolled in PARA. The fact of the matter is, we wouldn't be here today but for the screw-ups by Ramsey County and PARA. And it's grossly inequitable to punish Ms. Hedman. She's been a 30-plus year dedicated public employee, faithfully serving the county and the state. And why should she have to bear the brunt of a negligence of Ramsey County and PARA, which counsel just a few minutes ago said, had she been properly enrolled in PARA that day she started, which she should have been, then she would have been entitled to the rule of 90. And our argument is that you can make that happen here now and correct that injustice.
Well, and part of the correction would include her payment of all those amounts that should have been paid?
Sure. I mean, she can, if as part of the court's order, it would require her to make up contributions from back at that time, and also require Ramsey County to make up the contributions. That could certainly be a part of the court's order.
How do you respond to the argument of counsel, though, that because there was no appeal from the PARA order that we've referenced already, that you're bound by that, and it basically defeats your arguments here?
It's a different issue, Your Honor. The ALJ never decided whether Ms. Hedman was a covered employee under a public pension plan for purposes of the MSRS rule of 90. In fact, he made it absolutely clear he was making no determination of MSRS's obligations to Ms. Hedman under the rule of 90 or any obligations they might have. And he noted that MSRS was not a party. It was not even a player with the ALJ proceedings. So she cannot be bound by something that was not litigated, not decided, and against an entity that was not privy to or a party to that proceeding.
Well, and I'm just looking at the recommendations. It says the administrative law judge recommends that the board find that she should have become a member of PARA on May 31, 1990, and that Ramsey County should have commenced taking deductions from her salary for that contribution to PARA on May 31, 1990. I mean, are you bound by that?
No, Your Honor, because now we're litigating the MSRS Rule of 90 obligations, and Ms. Hedman should have been actually a PARA member from the day she started. There is no waiting period to become a paramember as a county employee. The only requirement is that you meet a certain income threshold, which clearly she did. You don't have to wait up 6 months, wait a year, jump through any other hoops, etc. Ramsey County plainly and simply messed up. And Para could have corrected it too. What Ramsey County decided was that she was a temporary employee. Well, there was no such classification of a temporary employee. And in fact, her supervisor also refuted that and submitted an affidavit in the Para proceeding that she was not a temporary employee. She was expected to continue working there so long as her work was satisfactory. So it was there's no question that Ramsey County made an error. Para didn't fix the error. And counsel for the MSRS had admitted that, but for that error, she would have been a contributing member and we wouldn't be here today. And our argument is that the court should not penalize Ms. Hedman because of those errors, and it should rectify this injustice right now.
All right. Well, thank you. And Mr. Vanzalowa, you've got an extra few minutes as Mr. Forrest had an extra few minutes for his case as well. Any other questions by the judges? All right. Very good. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. It was very well presented and argued, and we will get a decision out within the statutory period of time.